Welcome to Cut and Thrust, your podcast for the bloody and sometimes bizarre journey through the Middle Ages. Whether it's dark battles, questionable hygiene, or hair-raising rulers, here you'll get history as it really was, raw and unfiltered. So grab your sword, put on your helmet, and let's dive into the wild world of the past.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Battle Merchant Podcast. I'm Hendrik.
And I'm Carmen. Today, we are talking about a figure we all know, or at least we think we do.
Saint Nicholas. I bet every one of us diligently polished our boots as children on the evening of December 5th and put them outside the door.
Oh yes, mine always stood outside the front door. And the next morning, on December 6th, there was chocolate inside, gingerbread, sometimes even nuts. That feeling of checking in the morning. Priceless.
That's the image we all have in our minds, isn't it? The friendly, elderly gentleman in the red coat with the white beard who comes by at night and brings the gifts.
But even as a child, I wondered, who was he really? Is he just a fairy tale character, or...
Or is there actually more to the story?
Exactly.
And this is where it gets really interesting. Because Saint Nicholas, as we know him today, this mythical gift bringer, he's actually based on a real historical person.
Wait, actually real? Not just legend?
There really was a man named Nicholas. He lived in the early 4th century, born sometime between 270 and 286 AD, in Patara, which is in modern-day Turkey.
That suddenly makes him so tangible. No longer this abstract fairy tale figure, but a flesh and blood human being who lived almost 1700 years ago.
What I find particularly fascinating is his name, Nikolaos. That's Greek, and the meaning is, how should I put it, surprisingly powerful.
And what does it?
Victory of the people.
Oh, that doesn't sound anything like the cozy gift-giving uncle. Victory of the people, that's almost militant.
Doesn't fit at all with the image of the burlap sack full of sweets. But that's exactly what shows how much has changed over the centuries.
What else do we know about the real Nicholas? Are there many sources?
Honestly, relatively little that's verified. The historical record is thin. What we do know... He later became Bishop of Myra and was known for his kindness and helpfulness.
Well, that fits with the modern image. The kind, helpful.
Partly, but there's another side that's often forgotten today.
Let me guess. Knecht Ruprecht?
Among other things. In the old days, Nicholas wasn't just the friendly gift bringer. There was also a dark side with punishments and threats.
The infamous switch.
If a child wasn't well behaved, they didn't get presents. Parents threatened their children. Saint Nicholas brings his companion along, Knecht Ruprecht. And he supposedly knew everything about each child, whether they'd be naughty or nice.
He essentially had the list, and depending on the region, this companion goes by completely different names, right? Schmutzli, Krampus.
In Switzerland, he's called Schmutzli. In Bavaria and Austria, Krampus. The more sinister depictions show him covered in fur with horns, almost like a demonic figure.
That's pretty intense when you think about it. Today, Saint Nicholas is more of a harmless, friendly grandfather figure. That whole fear element has largely disappeared.
Times have changed. In some regions, Saint Nicholas, Santa Claus, and Knecht Ruprecht have more or less merged into one figure. In others, they remain clearly separate. The bearded man with the sack.
But the original story is so much more layered. The legends, the miracles attributed to him.
He performed quite a few of those, according to tradition at least. He's said to have calmed storms, even brought the dead back to life.
Almost like a superhero of early Christianity.
In a way, he was. St. Nicholas remains one of the most revered figures in history to this day. In Russia, he's even considered a national patron saint. In Orthodox churches, his image hangs on the iconostasis right next to Christ and Mary.
So, far more than just the man who puts chocolate in boots.
Much more. And that's exactly what we're going to explore today. From the historical bishop to the gift bringer and everything that happened in between. Let's start right away with the verified facts, or rather, what's considered verified.
And we have to preface this by saying, shockingly little. The historical record is extremely thin. What we have are legends, oral traditions, but verified historical evidence? Barely any.
As I mentioned, we know he was born between 270 and 286 AD in Patara, a port city. That 16-year range alone underscores how uncertain even the most basic facts are.
And yet this man became one of the most revered figures in history. That's remarkable.
It's said he received his ordination as a priest from his uncle at just 19 years old. But even that isn't documented. It could be true, or it could be a later embellishment.
But if he really lived in the early 4th century?
Then he lived through one of the most brutal periods for Christians.
The persecution under Diocletian?
The Christian persecution under Emperor Diocletian was the most severe and last in the Roman Empire. It began in 303 AD and lasted at its core until about 311. Diocletian wanted to stabilize the empire and imperial rule through the old pagan cults. And Christians, who rejected emperor worship, were seen as disturbers of order.
They refused to make sacrifices to the traditional gods. In Roman eyes, that was high treason.
The measures were systematic. Church buildings were destroyed, holy scriptures burned. Christians lost their civil rights, couldn't file lawsuits, couldn't hold public office.
And for bishops and priests, it was even worse?
They were specifically targeted. Arrest, imprisonment, torture, all aimed at forcing them to renounce their faith. Those who stood firm were executed or sent to forced labor in the mines.
And Nicholas is said to have been imprisoned and tortured himself? That makes him more relatable. Not just a kind gift bringer, but someone who truly suffered.
What's remarkable is, he was already Bishop of Myra when he was arrested. And after his release, he simply carried on. In 325, he even attended the Council of Nicaea. A torture survivor who retained his highest spiritual office despite everything.
That shows what kind of standing he must have had.
Evidently, enormous trust within his community. As bishop, he's said to have performed several miracles. But we need to be careful here.
The miracle stories?
Exactly. Stories like calming storms or raising the dead. These are classic legends that formed around his figure, where you never know if there's a kernel of historical truth.
That's often the case with saints. The line between historical person and legendary glorification blurs, especially when the sources were written much later.
Nicholas died on December 6th, hence St. Nicholas Day, by the way, probably sometime between 343 and 351. The exact year is uncertain, only the day is really established. So he lived to be at least 60, possibly over 70.
A ripe old age for that era, especially after imprisonment and torture.
And here's the interesting part. After his death, at first, not much happened. No immediate cult, no pilgrimages.
That came later?
Only about 200 years after his death did his veneration really begin. It spread from Greece across Eastern European countries. In the West, there were already some cult sites earlier, but the real breakthrough came with the transfer of his relics to Bari in 1087.
So it took centuries for the Bishop of Myra to become the famous saint.
And interestingly, he became most popular in Russia. There he wasn't just a patron saint of individual professions.
He became one of the most important patron saints of all.
In Russia, he became one of the most important patron saints of all. This minor figure from a port city in modern-day Turkey, over 2,000 kilometers away, became one of the most venerated saints of an entire vast empire.
That shows how legends travel, how a local bishop becomes a universal figure over centuries, through word of mouth, through merchants, through the church.
And with every border the story crossed, new tales were added, new miracles, new attributes. The Nicholas we know today is the result of almost 1700 years of cultural transformation.
Layer upon layer was added. The historical core, this courageous bishop who survived persecution, increasingly became a mythical figure. Let's come back to that dark side you mentioned earlier. Saint Nicholas wasn't always just the friendly gift bringer.
There were darker aspects too. If you weren't well behaved, you didn't get chocolate. You got the switch.
Exactly. And for this task, Saint Nicholas had his well-known companion with him, who was essentially the enforcer of these punishments.
What's interesting is, depending on the region, this companion is known by completely different names.
In Switzerland, he's called Schmutzli. In Luxembourg, Hausiker, derived from Husiker, meaning cloak. And then there's...
the Krampus, in Bavaria and Austria.
And that's something else entirely. The depictions of the Krampus are sometimes really, well, terrifying is the right word.
Fur all over his body, horns on his head, almost like a demonic figure from ancient Alpine folklore.
In contrast to the classic Knecht Ruprecht, who usually wears a dark robe, has a long beard and carries a switch or staff, the Krampus is much wilder, much more primal.
Saint Nicholas himself brings the treats. The Krampus carries his basket more as a prop to frighten, symbolizing taking away the naughty children. That's the duality. Nicholas rewards, his companion punishes.
Do you know what fascinates me? This tradition is still alive today. In Austria and Bavaria, there are Krampus runs every year. Hundreds of people in elaborate costumes parade through the streets. Salzburg, Munich, the entire Salzkammergut region. With hand-carved wooden masks, torches, bells and chains. Thousands of spectators gather. This isn't dusty folklore. This is living tradition.
Although today there's security personnel and barriers, of course. In the past, it was much wilder.
And more dangerous. Children were actually chased.
That brings us to the historical question. Where does this figure actually come from? Knecht Ruprecht as a custom is documented from about the 16th and 17th centuries.
But the roots could lie even deeper. A possible precursor is the so-called Raue Precht, a frightening figure from pre-Christian folklore.
The name sounds similar. Precht, Ruprecht.
The Raue Precht was a terrifying figure from folk tradition. It said he would slit open the bellies of naughty children and stuff them with chaff. Or simply take them away, it varies by region. So much harsher than just a switch.
Such figures had their heyday from the late 16th to the 18th, even into the 19th century. Back then, people deliberately tried to make children compliant through fear.
Education through intimidation. That was an accepted concept at the time. Saint Nicholas came into the house, assessed behavior, and those who failed faced the dark side.
Today we'd call that fear-mongering. Critical voices called it that back then too.
It's interesting how that changed. In early sources, Knecht Ruprecht is depicted as a truly evil adversary of Saint Nicholas. Evil personified.
Not as a helper, but as an opposing force.
His job was to punish naughty children with the switch and motivate them toward diligence and good behavior. The pedagogy of fear.
Over time, that changed. The evil, punishing Ruprecht became the mild gift-bringer and helper of Saint Nicholas in most regions.
From boogeyman to sidekick, so to speak.
You could say that. Society changed, parenting methods changed, and Knecht Ruprecht changed along with them.
Although the Krampus in the Alpine regions still has that wild, untamed energy. You see it at the Krampus runs. That primal power is still there.
It's almost as if there are two lines of development. The tamed Knecht Ruprecht in the north and the wild Krampus in the south.
And the Schmutzli in Switzerland, somewhere in between.
What's interesting is, all these figures ultimately serve the same function. They embody consequence. The dark side of the deal.
Without the threat, the reward would have been worth less. At least that's what people thought. Today we see parenting differently, but these figures remind us of how our ancestors passed on values.
But where does the custom of someone dressing up as Saint Nicholas and handing out gifts actually come from? It has a surprising origin.
In the Middle Ages?
In the Middle Ages, in monastery and cathedral schools, there was something called the bishop game. A child would be appointed bishop for a day.
A child as bishop? That's almost subversive.
Dressed in proper vestments, mitre, staff, the full regalia, this child was then allowed to reward or punish the other children for their behaviour.
So, basically, role reversal. The students got power over their classmates for a day.
Originally, this was mainly on December 28th, the Feast of the Holy Innocents. From the 13th century onward, individual regions moved it to St. Nicholas Day, some also to New Year's. The dates developed quite differently by region.
And how did it end up on St. Nicholas Day?
The custom was later moved to honor St. Nicholas. The symbolism simply fit. The kind bishop who gives gifts to children or admonishes them.
That explains the costume. But where does the idea of secret gifts come from? That Nicholas comes at night and leaves something behind?
There's a wonderful legend for that. Before Nicholas became bishop, he inherited considerable wealth from his parents.
Wealthy and devout. Interesting combination.
Near him lived a merchant who had fallen into desperate straits. He had three daughters, but couldn't raise the dowry that was necessary at the time to marry them off.
Without a dowry, that meant...
practically no future for the girls. And the merchant came up with... let's say, a dark plan to get money. A desperate idea that would have put his daughters in great danger.
I can imagine which direction that went.
Nicholas found out about it, and instead of publicly denouncing the man or preaching at him, he did something unexpected. One night, he secretly threw a lump of gold through the window. At least that's how the Legenda Aurea tells it.
Through the window, not through the door.
Secretly, without being seen. The merchant found the gold and was able to marry off his eldest daughter.
And Nicholas did it again?
And now, a quick word from our sponsor. Feeling curious? Then head over to battlemerchant.com. They've got all sorts of medieval stuff, from costumes to armor and loads more. Totally worth a look.
Two more times. For each of the three daughters. On the third occasion, however, the merchant caught his secret benefactor.
And then?
Nicholas asked him to keep quiet. He didn't want to be celebrated as a benefactor. The giving was meant to remain anonymous.
But the merchant talked.
The merchant told everyone who would listen. So much for keeping secrets.
Ah, and that's where the secret gift giving comes from. That's the origin.
According to the legend, yes. Adults followed Nicholas's example. They threw gifts into rooms where children were staying.
Through the door, through the window, just toss them in and disappear.
That led to a practical problem, though.
Which was?
The older children had an advantage. Bigger, faster, longer arms. They snatched up the flying gifts before the little ones could even react.
I can picture that. The big kids with full hands, the little ones empty-handed.
Pretty unfair. And that's why the custom developed of placing the gifts overnight in a container, where each child had their own share.
From flying lumps of gold to filled boots. That's quite a development.
Although the boots have their own story too. It's said that one of the lumps of gold landed in a sock that was hanging by the fireplace to dry.
That's why stockings hang by the fireplace in some countries.
In the USA, for example, the Christmas stockings. That goes back to the same legend.
And here people put shoes or boots outside the door? More practical. They weren't needed in everyday use like bowls or dishes.
It's fascinating how so many different traditions emerged from a single legend over centuries. The core is always the same. Secret giving, generosity without expecting anything in return.
And the idea that children wake up in the morning and something magical has happened while they slept. That has endured across all these centuries. What strikes me is the containers for gifts have changed considerably over the centuries. Before boots, there was actually a completely different tradition.
The paper boats!
Since at least the 15th century, children crafted little boats from paper, cardboard, or even dough. The so-called boat setting, especially in the Netherlands and northern Germany. They would set them out so Saint Nicholas could place his gifts inside.
But why boats specifically? That doesn't seem obvious at first glance.
There's a legend behind that too. Nicholas was considered the patron saint of sailors. According to tradition, he saved seafarers in distress from death.
That's why so many coastal churches bear the name Nikolai. I never noticed that, but when you think about it...
Hamburg, Lübeck, Stralsund, all along the coast you'll find Nikolai churches. The name is no coincidence.
The ship became a true attribute of the saint. In art, you often see him depicted with a ship.
And in some regions, this symbol caught on for St. Nicholas Day. Children made their little boats, placed them at the window or outside the door, and hoped for cargo from St. Nicholas.
From paper boat to boot outside the door, that's quite an interesting shift. The boot ultimately won out.
Because it was more practical. Bowls and dishes were needed in everyday life. You couldn't just leave them out overnight. But the children's shoes were standing by the door anyway.
And then in the 16th century came the...
Reformation! That completely changed the custom again.
In what way?
Well, there are... How do I explain this best? Two different forms of the St. Nicholas custom. The placing custom and the visiting custom.
Placing versus visiting. Those are opposite concepts.
With the placing custom, the older form, someone secretly puts the gifts in the boots or containers at night without being seen. The child wakes up in the morning and finds the gifts there.
That matches the original idea, the secret giving.
The visiting custom is different. An adult dressed as Saint Nicholas actually comes into the living room. He checks whether the children have fulfilled their duties.
That's what we often experience today. St. Nicholas Knox comes in, has his golden book with him.
This shift from placing to visiting happened mainly in areas of the Counter-Reformation. Anonymous gift-giving became a personal encounter.
With all the consequences, the child suddenly stands before an adult in costume who evaluates them.
Good children were given gifts. Careless children were admonished. That was the original character of the visiting custom.
Critics called that fear-mongering even back then.
Rightly so, I'd say. But interestingly, that has changed too. Today, the visiting custom still exists in many regions, but mostly without that judgmental, evaluating character.
St. Nicholas comes, hands out gifts, maybe listens to a poem, but the atmosphere of threat has largely disappeared.
Society has changed, and the custom has changed with it. I find that remarkable. These traditions aren't set in stone.
They adapt. What worked as a parenting tool in the 17th century would meet resistance today.
But the core remains. The ritual, the anticipation, the specialness of December 6th. Whether placing custom with boots outside the door or visiting custom with a costumed St. Nicholas, the magic is the same.
And that brings us full circle to where it all begins. The polished boots on the evening before. The hope for filled shoes in the morning.
What I'm still curious about. The legends surrounding Nicholas go far beyond gift-giving. There are some pretty unusual stories.
Unusual is putting it mildly. Some of these legends are truly astonishing. Before we wrap up, I need to mention something important. With all the legends about Nicholas, there's a problem.
Which is?
It's now believed that two historical persons were partly merged into one. Nicholas of Myra from the 4th century, whom we've been talking about the whole time, and a namesake from the 6th century, known as Nicholas of Zion, who later became Bishop of Pinara.
That explains why some legends seem so different. Different deeds were attributed to a single figure.
And some of these legends are really remarkable, to put it mildly.
Now I'm curious.
One of the most famous tells of three scholars, young students. They were murdered by an innkeeper out of greed, dismembered and pickled in brine.
Wait, what? Dismembered and pickled?
Like salted meat.
An angel supposedly told Nicholas about it. He went to the innkeeper, confronted him, found the barrel.
And then?
He reassembled the scholars and brought them back to life.
That's dark. Much darker than goat lumps through the window.
Resurrections were supposedly not uncommon for Nicholas, according to legend. But there are also curious stories that are more likely to make you smile.
Tell me.
It's said that Nicholas was very devout, even as an infant. So devout that on the weekly fast days, those were Wednesday and Friday, he only nursed from his mother once a day.
A fasting baby? That's creative.
Legend making knows no bounds.
That shows how important it was to people.
Wait, I have to mention a few more. Nicholas saved people from famine, returned a kidnapped child home by whirlwind, saved innocents from execution, and, this is my favorite, no wait, that was... Oh yes, he even battled the ancient goddess Diana.
Diana? The Roman goddess?
According to legend, she had a sacred tree that Nicholas had cut down. A classic conflict between old pagan cults and the new faith.
Fascinating how so many different stories gathered around one person. From the kind gift bringer to the demon vanquisher.
That's the nature of saints' legends. They grow with the needs of the faithful. Each community adds something that fits them.
Sailors needed a patron saint, so he rescues seafarers. Merchants needed a model of generosity, so he throws gold through windows.
And in the end stands this multifaceted figure. A man from the 4th century who lived in a small town in modern-day Turkey, and whose name nearly every child in the world knows today.
From historical bishop to mythical gift-bringer. Almost 1,700 years of cultural history united in a single figure.
And when the boots stand outside the door again on December 6th, all of that is contained within. The legends, the customs, the transformations.
That's it for today. We hope you enjoyed this journey into the history of Saint Nicholas.
If you found this topic interesting, feel free to visit battlemerchant.com. On the blog, you'll find many more fascinating articles about history, the Middle Ages, and historical customs.
Until next time, and happy Saint Nicholas Day.
Take care.
And so we ride towards the end of this episode. Keep your swords sharp and your mugs full. We'll catch you in the next one.